Hi, today's August 19th, 2016. This is Movie Views Podcast number 171. I'm Todd Agassi.
Heck yeah, it is. I just added, heck yeah, it is, after you said this is Movie Views Podcast 171.
And that's, well, you know who I am. That's, and you know who he is, too. That's John Westfall. So, we've been doing this for like over 100 episodes now together, haven't we?
Or something close to that. We've been very close to that. Yeah. Because there have been, I started on like episode 68 or 69, and I've missed maybe 10, 15 episodes in that time. We're getting close to number 100.
Yeah. Okay, so the first thing I wanted to mention, well, I guess the first thing I should mention is for those of you not in or interested in Hawaii in particular, but I'm going to say it anyway, today is our state admission day. So Hawaii became a state on this date, more or less. Actually, not exactly this date. We just celebrated on Fridays. But in 1959, so we're coming up on 60 years of statehood in a couple of years, in 3 years. Anyway, so I'm off today, and I'm talking to John on a Friday instead of a Saturday like we usually do. The first thing I wanted to mention is not news, but it's new to me. And that is, after just looking at my daughter's storage situation of videos and music and stuff like that on her half a terabyte MacBook Air, of which she was running dangerously low, I said, you know what? You need to stop buying music. Actually, most of the data was taken up by photos. She had like 240 gigabytes of photos. She likes to take photos. So we had to clear away some of that and store that off on various archival areas, including Google Photos. But in any case, so I said, I tell you what I'll do, kid. I will give up my grandfathered El Cheapo Google Play Music plan, which I was paying $8 a month for instead of $10, and I'll add you to the and create a Google Music family plan, which is, I think, $15 a month. So I sacrificed my $24 a year savings for my daughter, like dad should do, right? You got to sacrifice stuff for your kids. And I put her on my Google Play Music family plan and encourage her to just listen, just stream it. You've got Wi-Fi everywhere, you know. Just stream it when you're on Wi-Fi and don't store music on your hard drive. Your solid-state drive. Or your phone, for that matter. So at any rate, $15 a month seems useful. And in addition to, getting Google Play Music, it also gets you YouTube Red, so you can watch YouTube videos without commercial pre-rolls and all of that. And let's see, one other thing. Oh, I think we can share movies, so if I buy movies, you can watch it on Google Video. And Google Play Music also lets you download music. So if you're going on a trip, for example, and you're going to be in an airplane with no data access, you can just download the music you want and take it with you and listen to it as long as you maintain your subscription. Anyway, so that's that. I thought that was, for those of you looking for an option to save family members some storage space, there's that and a few other things.
I think that'll probably also make sure that you end up in a nicer retirement home than the one that you would have put you in otherwise.
The little grass shack on the beach.
Yeah. You might actually get a real roof.
Okay. Next up, so there's a rumor. I thought it was a for sure thing, but apparently it's just a rumor that there will be an Apple event on September 7th. Is that what you've been reading too, John?
Yep, that's what I see. And it's probably a pretty good rumor. It's right around the right time for Apple to have an event. Although, you never know. Occasionally they throw for a loop. They go a little later, a little earlier.
Or sometimes they do two. Two different months.
Yeah, that's true. We've seen September events and October events. Yep. Although, really haven't seen much in the pipeline about anything other than Apple Watch and iPhone. So iPads and MacBooks really haven't seen too much hinting at a refresh, even though one could argue the MacBooks need a little bit of refreshing.
MacBooks in dire need of refresh.
Yes.
But I have seen a couple of rumors about iPads. There's a couple about an iPad Air 3. Which if the upgrade rumors are true, would make the iPad Pro Junior, the little one, completely unnecessary, in my opinion.
Yeah, I don't know how much I believe that there's going to be another iPad Air.
Yeah. For all intents and purposes, the iPad Pro Junior, the 9.7-inch device, is the iPad Air 3.
Yeah.
It's everything the iPad Air 3 has, plus the smart connector and blah, 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 so...
The only thing it doesn't have is a 64 gigabyte option build.
Yeah, it's 32 or 28. which drove me. And I am surviving with 32 gigs, by the way. You know, the trick is not to store video and music on it.
You know, take your own advice from your daughter.
Yeah, exactly. But what have you been hearing? Aside from and there are other rumors the iPad Mini is going to go away, which is the worst idea in history. Well, that and iPod suck.
I will be curious to see if that comes to fruition, because we've seen the iPad Mini death knell a few times now, and it still keeps going. So, no particular order, some of the more interesting rumors, the Apple Watch 2 rumors that we should see a faster Apple Watch with integrated GPS and some additional fitness tracking. Unfortunately, no cellular connection. That's something that Apple has been rumored to be working on, but that's probably not going to show up until the Apple Watch 3, whenever that shows up.
Now, let me ask you something about that. Why is it people want a cellular version of a watch?
So that they can leave their iPad or their iPhone wherever they want to leave it and just go out with just the watch.
Like if they're running or something.
Yeah, running, or I could see quick, you know, run out here and there and just have my watch. So if you think about it, if you really do embrace and you own your own home, so you can put in whatever hardware you want, and you live in a fairly modern city, an Apple Watch with cellular would get you absolutely everything you'd need. You'd be able to get in and out of your house with a Bluetooth connection from the watch to your door lock. You could go down to a store that takes Apple Pay, buy whatever you need, and pay for it, or you know, go to Starbucks and show your ID there and get that. So really, if you had cellular, that would be all you'd need. You could leave with just a watch.
But presumably you'd have to have an account for it too, right? Which means to be paying more.
Yeah, I think that's probably where Apple's held up in negotiations. It wouldn't surprise me if Apple, being Apple, is trying to strong arm a bit of a deal where right now, for example, Verizon charges $10 for a regular device or a tablet and $40 for a smartphone, et cetera, et cetera. It wouldn't surprise me if Apple is either throwing all of their weight behind you cannot charge Apple Watch users more, which would seem like a ludicrously horrible thing for the carriers, but the kind of thing Apple would do. Or they're saying, okay, if you charge, you have to charge a very small, you know, $1 or $2 a month for this extra device.
Yeah. You know, because the interesting thing on the Google Fi world is that I haven't done it because I don't have any LTE tablets. But there are some select tablets that Google Fi supports, including iPad Mini 4, LTE version, where if you have a Google Fi account, and, you know, phone, I have a Nexus 6, for example, Google Fi, you can add one of the supported tablets for LTE data and pay nothing extra except for whatever data you use.
Mm-hmm.
So that would be pretty cool if they could negotiate something like that.
That wouldn't surprise me if that's the game plan. The rumors I saw was that cellular was put off for these negotiations were in place, and also battery life and a cellular connection. Although cellular connections are not as battery hungry as other radio connections,
right?
So I think it's probably the negotiations, and really that seems to be a major refresh sort of thing for the Apple Watch, not a minor refresh.
Okay.
And since Apple tends to do these major, minor, I would think the Apple Watch 2 being an evolution, because also the other rumor with the Apple Watch 2 is that the body style is going to remain unchanged. So, and then I would think even then the Apple Watch 3, the only thing that will happen is it'll get thinner. Because if you think about it, if they make the Apple Watch thinner, you can still use the same bands and straps.
Right.
Which I think is probably in the plan, because with the price of those things, I think Apple would have a lot of angry people if after the Apple Watch 2, Apple Watch 3 and above, you need different bands for.
Agreed. Okay, the next, you know, you did some research for us to talk about this rumored event. And the next thing a little bit puzzled me. So you say there's an optical image stabilization for the iPhone 7. So you mean for a smaller device, or?
Yeah, so for the iPhone 6 family, the optical image stabilization only came with the Plus.
Right.
It That's wasn't on the 6 and 6S. So this rumor that I saw just today was that it would show up on the 7 and 7 Plus.
Okay, that'd be very nice, actually.
And the 7 Plus rumors are still saying that it'll be two cameras on a 7 Plus. So that would be kind of cool. And then there's a lot of minutiae that I just kind of found a great link on Mac Rumors, where they did a really nice roundup of all the rumors for the iPhone 7. So we can post a link to that with the podcast.
Okay, I'll do that.
Because that's just, it would take me, I could fill an hour just reading that. And might as well let you read it from them.
Yeah.
Other things that we're pretty sure we're going to find out on September 7 or whenever is the release dates for the iPhone 7, the iOS 10, its official drop, the Apple Watch 2, its official drop. And who knows, maybe something on Mac hardware or iPads. Apple doesn't like to steal the thunder a lot from the iPhone releases. I could see them coupling iPhone and Apple Watch in on the same event, and then maybe doing an October event for other things.
Yeah, Apple usually separates the iOS rumors from the OS rumors. So it would be kind of unusual if they introduced everything at once. Although I think there was one year where they did that. Everything else in one fell swoop.
Yeah, that's really happened. Unusual. But I think naturally they see the Apple Watch and the iPhone living together in one space, yeah, and the iPads and the MacBooks in another space. So.
Yeah, and I got it. iPad Mini doesn't die. I don't know if anybody from Apple hears us implore or anything, that they do not kill that line, because I love the iPad Mini form factor. It's probably the iPad I use the most, even though it's the iPad Mini 4 is inferior in features compared to the iPad Pro Junior. I really hope that it gets the smart connector and other stuff that's available in iPad Pro, because if it had Apple Pen support, I would do something I've not done in a long time, that's buy two Jenkins in a row. First generation, skip number two and three, buy the fourth. So, you know, I'm not one of those people that buys every release. But I would consider it if it comes up to pro-like features.
Yeah, I almost feel the same way about the Pro line. I have been severely tempted a few times to sell my Apple or my iPad Air 2 and get an iPad Pro Junior, as you call it, just because I'd like to use the pencil and would like to have the keyboard. But I haven't done that yet because I'm pretty happy with my full-size iPad Pro.
Yeah.
Pro but senior. Yeah. Yeah. The Pro Senior.
Yeah.
By a whole 3 months or whatever the release window was.
Right. Okay.
So all of this discussion and all the rumors kind of made me think about what we look for as major leaps. And we don't see a lot of major leaps in the mobile space like we used to. It's not like 2005 when it was, oh, Wi-Fi. That would be really cool. or Bluetooth. Oh, that'd be neat. Yeah. And then GPS was the next. Oh, that'd be awesome. So I was thinking, you know, what would really be my biggest pet peeve that could be solved in the next 24 months? And I thought, you know, most days the configuration of John is one of two ways. John either wanders around campus with a small bag that has the iPad Pro and the Surface Pro and a few adapters and connectors and some name badges and whatever I need. Just a few light things. Or John wanders around with just an iPhone and an Apple Watch and then keys and a wallet. And I thought, you know, it would be insanely powerful if my iPhone, even though it is the 6 Plus and has a large screen, if it had a slightly larger screen. I could, because there's times I just need the iPad screen to get some serious work done.
Right.
And I know you've seen the rumors for years, and we've seen working prototypes, but why don't we have cloth screens yet?
Cloth screens?
Yeah, there have been technology prototypes over the years where basically screen technology made out of a flexible material.
Oh, okay.
That could be rolled up or could be easily stowed. And it just seems like that would be a killer configuration if you didn't want to carry a bag. Where, you know, you could have...
Or your bag could be a screen.
Your bag could be a screen, or I think, you know, in my pocket I usually carry a little... microfiber cloth that I use to clean my sunglasses. Nothing bigger than a microfiber cloth could be another secondary screen and kind of have a dual monitor approach to get a little bit more work done on a smaller device. But I that would be kind of cool, and I have no idea how it would work, but that would be really neat to see someone roll out in the next 24 months. So what would solve your woes? What would you want to see in the next 24 months if you could have anything?
Boy, you know, the only thing I would say is to have manufacturer-optimized folding keyboards. I mean, there are good folding keyboards. You know, I've got one that's pretty good, except a little rubber thingy keeps getting loose on it. I got to talk to the manufacturer about that, kind of complain about it. But Bluetooth, you know, no matter how good typing on screens gets, a physical keyboard is still the best. And if somebody could, for example, the iPad Pro Junior, 9.7 inches, the keyboard is a little too narrow, right? That's true for all 10-inch device keyboards.
Mm-hmm.
If they could have a folding keyboard that, you know, folded out to, say, the size of an iPad Pro Senior keyboard, that would be perfect. And there is the design. If you remember back in the 80s or 90s, back when IBM owned the ThinkPad line, they had a ThinkPad with a keyboard that kind of, not folded, but kind of had an overlapping when the notebook was closed. And you open it, the keyboard kind of expanded sidewards to create a full-size keyboard. You know, something like that design would be perfect for a tablet or phone. So that's kind of my pet peeve, is better typability with better keyboards.
Yeah, I have to tell you, the iPad Pro keyboard is an extremely usable keyboard on the senior side.
Right, right.
On your side, it's a little narrow. Although this last week, I've been heavily using my Surface Pro 4 keyboard or TypePad, and it's worked really well, too. Yeah.
That's the same size as a Pro Senior, right?
Yep. So, and then some days I have them side by side. I should really post the picture of my one office, my work display setup, where I've got something like six monitors in front of me. I kind of look like I'm at Mission Control now.
Yeah.
But I think keyboards are the most essential sort of item that need to be really well thought out and really usable in order to turn an tablet into a or a laptop replacement.
Yeah, and I have to say, now, I've been using a Surface Pro 4 since April, so 4 months now. And it's the type cover that I got it with, which I guess is a standard keyboard, and not the one with the fingerprint reader, the original type cover.
Mm-hmm.
It's excellent. I use that keyboard all the time. Like I said, I have an external keyboard I can plug in. I've never used it. The type cover is just that good to me. I use it day in, day out at work every single day.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I will, it's just because I feel like I could share these two things and not get judged. The first one is, it took me until this week to realize that on the iPad Pro Senior, you can actually put the cover, the type cover, into a back mode so that it kind of still displays in, you know, the little triangle flip over, but you don't have the keyboard in front. It's up against the back of the device.
Yeah.
That was kind of embarrassing that I hadn't figured that out for a while. And the Surface Pro 4, I did set up Windows Hello after we talked about it last week.
Right.
And man, is that good.
Isn't it good?
I cannot believe how good that facial recognition is. And honestly, on the iPads, I'm happy enough that I have fingerprint readers.
Right.
Because it gets me in just as fast.
Right.
But if you don't have a fast fingerprint reader like Touch ID or Windows Hello, it's just a pain to use a tablet. You have to type in a code or put in a password. That's annoying.
Exactly. I know when I get into work, you know, I usually have my Surface Pro 4 in Hibernate mode at work. It's usually propped open, not always, but if it's propped open, I just, you know, hit the on button. And even if I'm not even sitting directly in front of it, it usually recognizes me pretty well from various angles and so forth, and just logs me in.
It had trouble with my... I've set it up in the morning when I was wearing contact lenses, and then later in the day I used it with glasses. It had a little trouble with that. I did another improved recognition cycle with it, and now it has no problem with glasses or contacts.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah. Well, I'm glad you found it useful. Yeah, I was surprised at how well it works and how well it works under various conditions, because I had facial recognition turned on my Nexus 4 back when Android supported it. No longer does in the Nexus 4 because it was really terrible. But, yeah, the Windows Hello, at least with the cameras, and you have to have special cameras. The Windows Hello with the supported cameras will, you know, has infrared, so it'll see you in the dark and various angles. It's two cameras, so it's actually doing kind of some kind of 3D modeling to recognize you. So it's very, very well done.
Good stuff.
Yep. I was just thinking if I had any more grumps. You know, battery life, which is excellent. I think I mentioned on my last trip to the UK, I don't think I used my USB, my portable charger at any time. Yeah, I don't think I ever used it. It was just the phones last all day, so it was great.
Mm-hmm.
You know, phones have gotten really good. That's why people aren't buying more of them.
Yeah, right? That's exactly it. That's why, even though I am due for an upgrade this year, I find myself wondering if I'm going to get an iPhone 7.
Yeah, you know, it's funny. I asked my daughter before she went back to college for the fall semester. I said, hey, you know, your phone's due for a refresh. It's going to be 2 years old come, you know, around Christmas time. You want a 7 if it comes out? And she says, no, not really.
Mm-hmm.
I'm fine with this.
Well, before I was using an iPhone full time, I was buying the S releases.
Yeah.
So I had a 3GS that was kind of a play device that I bought when I was on Android all the time. I had a 4S that was kind of the same thing. I would use it sporadically here and there, but it was never my full-time device. And then I just happened to switch to iOS right about a month before the iPhone 5 came out. So I used my 4S for a month, and then I used the 5. And ever since then, I've been kind of doing major upgrades, you know, so the 5 to the 6. But I'm wondering if I might want to go back to the S releases.
Hmm. That's interesting. So wait another cycle.
Yeah, just because it is cool to get the new form factors, and it's right. always cool to see. But that really is all you get with the first release. The S is where you get things that actually work better.
Hmm.
You know, where you get like Touch ID that came out on an S release. So it's almost like the rough draft is the tick release, and the talk release is the final draft. So I might go back to it. We'll have to see.
Interesting. Well, I haven't made the decision, mostly because of the cost. Mm-hmm. You know, these phones are not cheap, and you know the so-called subsidized mode, which you really paid for, but you know, let's face it, most of us never thought about it that way.
Mm-hmm.
With the subsidized phones essentially gone now, you know, we're going to have to pay full price, right? It's probably going to be $700-$800, so it's something to think about, especially if you're going to buy two of them.
Exactly. Well, yeah. I got lucky in that I think my wife's pretty happy on hers, so if I upgrade, she won't be complaining that I have something she doesn't. So.
Yeah, and for me, it's my daughter and I on the same cycle of iPhones, so, and she's already said she doesn't really care, so which is kind of surprising, I guess.
Hmm.
But yeah, you know, she's not a real demanding kid, so it's been always been kind of interesting comparing her to other kids. Let's see. The last thing I have on our list of things to talk about is one that I was going to ask your help to figure out, and it's this one. So on the official Google Chromium blog, which is different from the Chrome blog, so the Chrome blog is the web browser. The Chromium blog is, you know, the Chromium OS, so that, you know, Chromebooks run and stuff. But this one talks about Chrome in specific, and it says that, well, the title is Chrome Apps. I forget what the title is, actually. Let me go look at it. The title just says From Chrome Apps to the Web, but it's that really doesn't tell. It basically says Chrome apps are going to go away in early 2018, and I'm trying to figure out what it means, so I was going to ask your help for it. So let me just, I hate it when people read directly from a blog, because it's kind of long, but I'm going to read this one. Just so, you know, we both are on the same footing, and you can help me try to understand this. This is Google, right, their blog. As we continue our efforts to simplify Chrome, we believe it's time to begin the evolution away from Chrome apps. There are two types of Chrome apps, packaged apps and hosted apps. Today, approximately 1% of users on Windows, Mac, and Linux actively use Chrome packaged apps. And most hosted apps are already implemented as regular web apps. We'll be removing support for packaged and hosted apps from Chrome on Windows, Mac, and Linux over the next 2 years. Okay, so I can never figure out, when I go to the Chrome App Store, I can never figure out what is a Chrome app, and what is a packaged app, what's a hosted app, what's an extension, what's, you know, whatever. How do you know what's going to work or not?
So here's the simple rule of it. An extension is something where you're browsing a web page and you go, huh, I want to do something with this web page.
Okay.
I want to clip it to Evernote. I want to analyze it using a developer tool.
Okay.
I want to turn on and off ads. I want to mess with this web page or save this web page or alter this web page or something about this web page.
Okay, so for example, as you mentioned, kind of alluded to, the Evernote web clipping app is an extension. It's not a package app. And similarly, UOrigin Plus or whatever it's called, the ad blocker is an extension. It's not a packaged app.
Yeah.
Okay.
And also, occasionally extensions can get very tricky. Like, for example, there's a Google Voice extension that I used for a long time. I'm not sure if it's still in active development. That was an extension because it would basically pop open a little tiny page, mm-hmm. and it was optimized to look like it was a menu, but it was, you know, basically loading a certain UI of Google Voice. Now, apps are things you would launch on their own and then do something within that app. Mm. So what's talking about when it comes to a web-hosted app, that'd be something like Facebook wants to just have an app that loads Facebook in a certain configuration UI, you know, mm-hmm, a certain mm-hmm. size, or locks you in. There's no browser bar. It's just you're in Facebook. Those aren't that popular because people just go to the websites.
Okay.
And the hosted or the packaged apps are collections of code that you would download and actually run inside of the browser. So you think of this as the browser acting as a runtime for a script and assets that are associated with that script. So I think one of the biggest ones that I remember back when Chrome first came out was a lines game that you could play, and it would keep track of your high score and that sort of thing. And that really was, I think, a good example of why apps never took off, because honestly, nobody ever thought of Chrome as where you run your apps. Mm-hmm. And as they note in that blog piece, only about 1% of users are using these apps in any way.
Okay, so the bottom line is, in general, most people, except the 1%, who presumably also using Windows Phone.
And if they're the 1%, they also have all of the money.
That's so, right, so they don't care.
They talk about the 1%, so they don't care, yeah.
Yeah, okay, all right. So this is not a big deal for most, no, for 99% of people.
It probably isn't, unless you've got that favorite game or that favorite app that was developed, then you're app out of luck. But, you know, that's I think this is just a natural removal of features. Google has not been is never afraid to remove features. They're never afraid to remove whole products.
Yeah, this is true.
Actively. But it's something I kind of respect and hate at the same time. Because, yes, it's annoying when an app goes away that, or a feature goes away that I might use. But it's also really nice to see a company say, we'll introduce a bunch of stuff, and the stuff that doesn't quite make it, we're going to get rid of. Mm. And we're not going to keep it on life support for years and years and years. That's generally Google's mantra, except Google Voice, which still scares me because it looks like it's on life support, but they don't seem to be in any hurry to remove it. Right. Which...
And you know, if you become a Google Fi user with their Google account attached to Google Voice completely disappears. Mm-hmm. Everything, the data, the phone number attached to it, everything disappears. So if you're going to switch to Google Fi and are a current Google Voice user, you really want to think about how you can do that. I did it by creating a second Google account. And mm-hmm. and getting on Google Fi through this new account. So I can still use Google Voice on everything except my Nexus phone on Google Fi. Although there is a workaround. Now, it turns out you can't use Chrome to log into Google Voice on the web. It'll just say, you know, use Hangouts or whatever.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
But what you can do is you can use a third-party browser based on Firefox, like Adblock Plus browser, for example. That doesn't, you know, adhere to Google's standard crawl, and you can actually log into Google Voice using a non-Google browser. So, that's our tip of the week, I guess.
Yep.
The other thing I guess I should mention, since we're talking about Google, I think Google Docs and Google Sheets got the ability to work in active split view mode on iPads the other week.
I know they did because I was using that right before our call. I'm actually on an iPad right now, so yes, the split view works very well on Docs.
Nice.
I assume it's on Sheets as well, too.
Yeah, you know, the iPad Pro is just a wonderful device. It is not a full computer, in my opinion, as Tim Cook and the rest of Apple would like us to believe, but it is so darn close. They're just, you know, it's just that 1 to 2 to 3% of things you can't do on it. At least I can't do it.
Well, and here's a weird feature that, so Apple does these things of weaving in strange features that you go, I see something is forming here, but it's not quite there yet. So, and I discovered this a few months ago by accident, and I don't think we've talked about it before. Basically, if you notice on the iPad now and on iOS devices, it used to be that whenever you went to a website and you had to upload a file, it always just popped you to your camera roll. and okay. That was the only thing you could upload was photos.
Yes.
Well, about, I think it was iOS 9, might have even been iOS 8, it started popping up locations, and it would pop up iCloud Drive, and anything that built itself into that framework, including Dropbox and other things. So that actually, for all the people who said, I really want a native file server or file system on my iPad, that really kind of gave it to you, because it gave you a cloud file system.
Right.
And the feature that really sealed it, where I thought, this is what Apple's eventual solution is. A few months ago, I was playing around on my Apple Mac Mini, that's my home server, and it's running LCAP, and it's running the latest server OS, and I happen to notice that on the file sharing tab, there's an option for share to iOS devices.
Okay.
It used to be, back in the days of iOS 2, 3, around then, when it was still iPhone OS, that whenever Apple talked about sharing files to the iPhone, it was either that you had to do it through iTunes, or you had to do it through WebDAV, which I've always found WebDAV to be an extremely buggy protocol.
And security lacking.
I've seen WebDAV successfully deployed in exactly one place in my entire life.
Yeah.
A school, an Ivy League school, oddly enough, and not one that I even worked at, that actually had WebDAV working pretty well. But in this case, when I was looking this a couple months ago, not only was there an iOS option, there was also a WebDAV option. I thought, well, that's weird. They must be two different things now, because there's WebDAV and iOS. So I do a little bit of Google searching, find out that if you have a Mac Mini server at home, and you've got file share set up on it, and you enable this Apple file share option for iOS, and you've got your Mac Mini server set up to have the right ports open to connect to it through VPN or whatever you need to do, you can actually, in that locations dialog box on iOS, where it shows you iCloud Drive and Dropbox and whatever else, you can get another option that reads your home server. And so that is kind of, I think, Apple's end game, where they're saying, okay, you've got these devices deployed in a workplace. You want to give access to your internal file shares. Yeah, we don't support server message block, so you're not going to be able to go directly to a Windows file system. But if you've got a Mac Mini file server somewhere, you can share out those file shares right to your iOS devices. And this is something that you find very little written about. You find very little discussed on it. But it's one of those things where I can kind of see in a few years this being an Apple strategy of saying, hey, it's already there. You can already push out those native file shares through your network infrastructure in your workplace.
If you have an iPad, if you have an Mac Mini.
or if you have a Mac with the server app. So that's any device running Mac OS plus the $20 server app.
Right. And by the way, the Mac Mini, that's another one Apple has been neglecting for a while.
Yeah, that's one that I'm not looking forward to when my Mac Mini eventually dies. Yeah. Last year, around this time last year, a hard drive in my Mac Mini died.
Yeah.
And I replaced it, and then I ended up knocking off a sensor on a board, so I had to replace that too.
Oh, I remember this.
Yeah, that was when, if I wanted to leave it was going to sound like it was always taking off.
Right.
So I replaced that, but my Mac Mini server is around 6 years old now, and I don't know what I'm going to do when it dies. I kind of haven't gotten that far.
Well, it'll be like when my Spot Watch died. First you'll grieve, and then you'll get some acceptance, and then you'll grieve some more.
Well, right now, all of the file shares on that Mac Mini, with the exception of about 500 gigs on one of the internal drives, they're all on external drives.
Yeah.
So if the actual device died tomorrow, all my files would be on a series of external hard drives, which I guess makes me feel a little bit better about if my Mac Mini server were to die.
Right.
Because it's probably not going to take all the external drives with it.
Well, 6 years old is pretty darn old for any kind of, personal computer, so you're pretty lucky it survived this long.
Yeah, well, Todd, I treat them right.
Yeah. Alrighty then, so there wasn't a lot of news this week. We'll see if there's anything interesting. I'm still waiting for their official release of Chromebooks that support Android apps. Waiting for that. Hopefully they'll come in the next month or two. I don't know. There's no official date the last time I looked. And we're less than a month away from the rumored iOS announcement, so that should be fun. I don't know what else is coming up.
I start teaching again on Monday.
Oh, well, yeah, yeah. The local university here starts up on Monday, which means traffic is going to go from 30 minutes to work to an hour, so that should be a lot of fun.
My commute's going to go from about 2 minutes to maybe 2 minutes and 15 seconds.
Yeah, you walk, right?
Yeah. Sometime, well, no, if I walk, it's around 20 minutes. But if I drive, it's about two and a half minutes.
All righty then. So that's the end of Mobius Podcast 171. We will talk to you again next time.